welcome to this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live, the show which ensures that you profit from your time spent here with experts, either through their industry insights, information, or simply learning from them. And today we have Wendy Wallace. She coaches political donors, candidates, and advocates on creating the strategic relationships they need to accomplish their goals. Welcome to the show, Wendy.
Thank you very much, Ajay. It's nice to be here.
Same here, Wendy. Same here. And it's a pleasure to talk to you and know more about you from the biggest democracy of the world with the largest democracy of the world. So there is so much in common to understand. So, Wendy, my first question or observation is to understand from you is you are sitting at a most important place in the world, Washington, D.C. And this is such a strategic or nice place that you can not only watch the U.S. politics very closely, you can also watch the world politics through those, from there. And nothing better than that. So from you, let us understand what exactly is the U.S.'s current political landscape now, and then within that landscape, because you've got elections there, elections coming in India next year, elections happening again in Russia next year, and so many places across the globe will be watching the U.S. So how does that landscape, the U.S. landscape, looks now in your eyes, and how does the world look from there to you, as per you? Help us understand two, three things here at the same time. So interrelated, I thought, why not put them together and let you answer at your own pace.
All right. I will do my best. Thank you. That is a tall order. But so the thing I'll say about, I'll start with U.S. politics and then we'll go broadly to the world. You know, for us, First of all, the presidential election has already started, as I'm sure you all are seeing across the globe. Like, the Republican side of the aisle is, people are jumping in and they're fiercely debating. You know, I think the first Republican debate is going to be in August, if I'm not mistaken, mid-August. And so we're really going to get to see them kind of go up against each other head to head. Like, right now they're sort of dancing around each other in Iowa and New Hampshire, where the first primaries will be. But I think for us also, you know, the Donald Trump is still a real factor. And he is leading the Republican field in spite of, you know, indictments and threats of going to jail and all of the things that are constantly popping in the news over here. So it is really incumbent upon the other members of the Republican field to, like, try to make themselves seen. And we're seeing a lot of different tacks. You know, you've got Chris Christie, who is just like, attack, attack, attack. Donald Trump is terrible. We need somebody else. You know, he is constantly on offense on that. We've got some people who are hugging Trump a little closer, who don't want to aggravate his base. And so, like, that is a real dynamic that is taking shape there. And then I think on the Democratic side with the president, we won't have a real primary. It'll just be the president and the vice president running again. And they are really trying to make sure that they are making the most of this time, particularly in the summer, so that they are out on the campaign trail, voters are seeing them, able to interact with them. And so I think what we will see over the course of the next few months, particularly while the Republicans are sort of duking it out, is the president and the vice president showing up in ways that exude leadership, and they are able to show, like, these are the things that we've been able to get done for the American public over our three-ish years so far in office, right? We want to be able to say, like, hey, we are fighting inflation. Hey, you know, the economy is coming back from the pandemic. They want to be able to show all of these things, the infrastructure bills that they've passed, and how that is creating jobs across the country. So it's a tall order. And then, of course, we have the world political stage. And so while we are sort of duking it out at home, we're also having to interact globally. And I think for us, you know, that looks like we're paying a lot of attention to the situation in Russia and the situation in China. I think with the Russian elections coming up soon, we are kind of like on the edge of our seats. I'll be honest. I'm on the edge of my seat. I want to see how that's going to play out. I am always aware of the fact that, what is that saying? When America catches a cold, the rest of the world has the flu, or anyway, something like that. And I feel like that is what we saw. We saw a lot of that politically coming out of 2016. I felt like, you know, America had the flu already. So like once we elected Donald Trump, and you could see the ripple effects of that in the UK, in across Europe, like in all these other places, and even in some of the South American elections, we got these like strong men types, you know, a lot more conservative, kind of in the shadow of Donald Trump. Other people were also electing Trumpian style leaders. And so we don't want that to continue. And I think we're starting to pull out of that a little bit, but hopefully we can make that turn continue by reelecting President Biden, and then hopefully others will follow suit.
Right, right, Wendy. You watch politics very closely. You coach a lot of political donors. So that's, you control the purse strings in a way, you know, to that. So we'll come to that. But to understand from you, we say in international politics is that in politics itself, that a week is a long time in politics. Here, the elections are happening 4 years later. What are the issues now, especially, you know, a lot of people, young people who would be looking at the elections? Will the same issues 4 years back be the same that will work? Are the issues differently? Are the politicians looking to target young people differently? Some states have banned TikTok, but if I understand, they have also hired some influencers to reach this young generation through TikTok at the same time. So I don't know, you'll be knowing better. I read it some time back. I don't know if it's still working or if that is fully true, but that's one news I read some time back. Amidst all these things, so how do you get these youngsters involved in the politics of today? A lot of these people who are candidates or who are participants or in the political process are people who are a bit older, and they have to target the younger generation. Last time we were talking about Generation Z. Now we are also adding one more generation, which they will not be voting or doing anything, but it's the alpha generation, you know. And so, but they would certainly be hearing it about a lot from their parents. And who knows, some of them are quite vocal enough to influence their parents, because parents will be looking at their future in the coming days. How does this, the battle or the understanding between or calibration of understanding between the young and the old looks like in the world of today?
That's a great question. I will just say I am a firm believer, and have been for a very long time, that you cannot make voters conform to you. You have to go to where they are, right? You have to meet people where they are. So if I am communicating on Facebook or Twitter and young people are not there, they're not seeing my message. So it doesn't matter how relevant it is to them or how good it would be for them. They're not hearing it. And so I believe that means we have to take the message to TikTok. we have to take the message to Twitch and Snap and Be Real and like all of these places where people are. I remember last year in the gubernatorial race in Pennsylvania, now Governor Josh Shapiro was doing like Be Reels on the campaign, right? It's like a social media app and you take the picture facing you and away from you. So it sort of shows where you are. People picked up on that. Like he has college age daughters who were like, Dad, you got to get on Be Real. Like if you're not, you know, if you're not being real, then like no one's going to see you. And it was true. And it really had an impact. I think the other piece is we know that the generation Gen Z is using TikTok as news. They Google things on, you know, they search for answers on TikTok. And so that is going to be a critical piece of this election for us. And I personally believe if you are not on TikTok or engaged in some way, you're missing a huge chunk of people. There are people, I'm in my 40s, my early 40s. My friends are on TikTok. So it's not just, you know, these young kids who are just now getting to be voting age, like around 18 and college kids. Everyone is on it in some way, shape or form. I do think what you mentioned before about states banning it, that was for state governments and on the more official side. I think, you know, I think every state has to make that call, and there are security risks to being on TikTok, and we have to acknowledge those. But from a purely political standpoint, I think it's a crucial tool to be able to navigate and make sure that you're reaching the people you need to reach. We have to focus on young people. They are engaged. I think these generations coming up, we know are the most engaged generations that we've seen in a very long time. So even the ones that are not voting, they're paying attention and they're being part of the conversation. So it's important to reach them.
Right, right, Wendy. So to understand from the world's perspective, how are these young people, they are viewing their institutions, political institutions, political parties, political leaders, today's time. A lot of, you see, when we were growing up, we were studying, we used to read about the political system, the strength of the political system, the strength of democracy. But at the same time, we also read about, you know, that patriotism is the last resort of the scoundrels. Politics is the last refuge of, you know, of scoundrels. And that used to take it whatever way it you wanted to take. That was there that much leverage was there. The openness was there. Today, the world has changed. A lot of people might be reading the same either on Google, and maybe tomorrow they will search it and find it on TikTok or even Instagram, the young generation. What is it that they are understanding? Are they going by the same norms, or they are defining norms? Because they are now getting the political message through a lot of this social media. And that is, and that social media is global. You may get some part of information from the local level, from your own community or peers, but a lot of messaging is also coming from outside. And outside world may not look at the US politics the same way. Right. The politicians may want it to look, or maybe the way they want to message. For example, in terms of political parties, how are these political parties, especially in your case, it is the two-party system, almost like China is one-party system. You guys have just the two-party system. And China, you say, is not democratic. And you are the largest democracy, biggest democracy in the world. How do we say, understand, the youngsters understand, okay, this is the best democracy in the world. What is the difference between these two parties? We have our own problems, but we have many, many parties here. Even among the national parties, regional parties, there are hundreds of them.
So, I mean, I think this is a real question that Americans are struggling with. One, particularly for younger generations, they are less likely to join a party. Like, they see the flaws in both parties. So there are, I feel like I'm constantly in conversations about third parties or other parties. And in some places, like in New York, they have multiple parties. Like, it's not just Democrats or Republicans. The Working Families Party has a real presence there. And in California, they have multiple parties. If you look at a California ballot, which, trust me, is like a real endeavor because they're like 30 pages long. But they have multiple, you will see that they have multiple parties, but they're not like nationwide. And so I do think it a little bit depends on where you live. But also, I think young people see the opportunity for growth, for us to be better. So they want to push the parties. And I think we see that mostly with these sort of insurgency candidates, like, you know, Bernie Sanders running in the 2016 and 2020 elections. He is sort of pulling the Democratic Party to the left, like trying to create a little bit more, you know, force them to do a little bit more. And I think young people really responded to that. I think on the Republican side, they see a similar thing, right? Like, they've had Tea Party Republicans and MAGA Republicans and, you know, like, and then they have the, you know, moderate, like, mainstream Republicans. So there's a lot of internal turmoil. And I think it creates a lane for people to figure out where they best fit. The other thing I will say is, there was a lot of questions. The other thing I will say is, you know, young people right now are in a moment where it has been not only in their best interest to be very engaged, but it has been sort of cool to be engaged for the past few years. I think, you know, some of that we have the 45th president, Donald Trump, to thank for that. He really energized people, I feel like, on both sides, for and against. But we've seen that energy sort of sustain over time. Young people showing up at all levels of the ballot, getting invested, whether they were running for office or supporting people who were running for office. And so I also think to your point about, like, you know, some of the people who are running being a little bit older, I think their ideas and their the way in which they approach the world is just a little bit different. And so the younger generations are really focused on equality and making sure that, you know, even though it might not be something that directly involves them, they want to be good allies, whether we're talking about immigration or LGBTQ rights or the environment. These are things that they care deeply about and have sort of grown up with in a way that older generations did not. And so they're more willing and, frankly, able, given the internet, to make their voices heard, and they're doing that.
Absolutely, Wendy. Now, how do you get them involved? This is a challenge, I think, globally. The type of messaging that they are getting from political system across the world, if I understand, whether it's any type of system, whether democratic or even any other form of system that we see across the world, is that the messaging is that the politicians will not solve their problems. The political system is not solving their problems. You see it in the US, even you see it in Russia. People are getting different messages. And so what is it that but young people want to get involved in positive politics, like they do have in college. A lot of politics is positive. A lot of times it is not. But you were part of student politics. You understand that. For a friend, you were part of that whole thing. Later on, you know, that gave you a lot of learning, and now you are watching politics so closely. In that sense, how can the young generation get interested or be engaged in politics? But that is the positive part of it. And not let this cynicism of politics, wherever it is, the US, Russia, even in India, you know, people generally may want to be part of politics only when they are into political ways, when they are a politician themselves. But generally, people tend to shy away. It's not a for us, or it's not a good thing. How can one do that? You believe, you feel that politics is also personal. So why do you feel so? And how can you be into politics or engaged into politics as a common person in a positive manner, in spite of all the negative things that you hear around it?
This is like, thank you very much. This is my favorite thing to talk about. I think one is, I do believe all politics is personal, but I also believe all politics is local. Here in the US, I feel like we have a tendency to get really swept up in like presidential years and presidential races or Senate races. But I always try to remind people when they're thinking about how to engage in the early stages that like the mayor of your city has more to do with your day-to-day life than the president, right? Like we need the president, but like we also need strong mayors, strong city council members. Also in the US recently, school boards have been a huge fight, right? Like we've got a movement of people that want certain lessons, and particularly history. We're fighting a lot about what history gets taught in schools. And so being engaged in who is running for school board and what those people believe your children should be taught is a huge piece of it, right? And I think for me, that creates the opportunity for small wins. It creates an opportunity for you to get to know the person that you are voting for and will be a leader in your community. I think a lot of times for us, particularly in our electoral system, it is a lot driven by fundraising and donors and contributions. And people feel like these are such high barriers to entry and they are, you know, impossible. They're like, I'm not a millionaire. How can I like have an impact? And I'm like, give $20 to a mayoral campaign, right? Like go meet the candidates, talk to them, shake their hand, figure out where they stand on things and like really listen to them. And you can see that you're having an impact. And I think that is like a really great way for people to get involved. And you're much more likely to see positive results, which helps you from getting discouraged. I think the hard part is getting people all riled up on a big race. And then if it doesn't go your way, then that's when all of those like negative messages really kind of like settle in for people, because they're like, oh, well, they were trying to tell me the whole time it wouldn't work. And like, we can't have positive messages and we can't have nice things. And it's like, that's not true. We can. But we have to work hard and we have to learn the right lessons. And I think the best way to do that is to start small and start at home.
Right, Wendy. Now, let's go to the things that you train a lot of people in, political donors, candidates, and advocates, and that's the money part. A lot of people donate money for political campaign, either be it the bigger guys, the middle guys, and also the, you get my point, the middle guys as well as the smaller guys who are trying to get into, understand this whole system. They all come to you. What is it that they want? Because we understand that money is the biggest power in politics and it controls. And most of the time during elections, the messaging is something else. And after elections, it is something else. Either some people, a lot of people talk about it is the military industrial complex, if I'm putting it right, or it's something else. And the whole politics of the US shifts to the foreign land. And the internal issues become. And a lot of people accuse it almost that US is more interested in outside politics. Sometimes, even one of your former presidents said that the US is one of the nations, it's almost like warmongering. I'm not exactly quoting it, almost like a nation which is a warmonger, which has gone into other places and all, if I understand Mr. Jimmy Carter. So looking in that aspect, what is these donors want? Is it that they want to be part of that power? Don't they understand that they are trying to buy their seat next to the power? Or is it that they actually want to contribute to the political system? Does the political system money from donations like this? What do you see positive in it? How do you see this part of things? How do you tell the candidates or anybody else about the influence of money into politics? Because today's money is going to influence the future of your children if the politics is not clean. How do you look? And when I saw talk of US, the US may be just the point that we are discussing, but it's actually applicable for all across the globe. How do you look at this aspect of political funding, especially so much of direct funding also happens?
Yeah, so I mean, I think there's like a few different ways to look at this, and there's a few different ways that donors approach it. So I'll say most of the donors who I deal with and have worked with over the years are individuals who have wealth and are interested in issue areas. And so their political giving is driven by those priorities. And so usually what happens is we sit down and go through all their priorities and then try to match them up with candidates, right? Who is aligned with your view, your worldview, and like, how do we sort of sort through them all? So it could be, you know, this person is running and they're very focused on voting rights. They want to make sure everyone has access to the ballot. Or this person is running and they are pro, you know, women's reproductive rights. Okay, that person gets added to the list because I'm also pro women's reproductive rights, that kind of thing. There are, though, you know, there's all kinds of reasons to give and not to give. There are some people who are focused on their business interests, and they give to candidates who they feel like will be supportive of that. And so there's a lot of different ways to kind of approach it. I always like to work with people who are values-based. So it for me, it makes it easier to kind of say yes, no, or like, hey, this person is good on some of your issues, but not so good on the others. I would just want to flag that. Maybe you want to move forward. Maybe you don't. Like, maybe you want to have a conversation with them. I do think there's also a lane of people who really want to use their support to, you know, to be able to build a relationship with an elected and push them on an issue, right? So maybe I have four issues that I prioritize. The person is good on three of them. I say, it's okay. I'm going to use this opportunity to go to events, to interact with this person and push them on my fourth priority. And hopefully I can get them to, you know, to be swayed and to see it my way. I'm trying to think what else. I mean, I think overall, there are very few people who go into it thinking about the military industrial complex. most of the people who are writing checks are not thinking about that. I think some of that is just like the American out of sight, out of mind nature of how we engage with politics. But yeah. I mean, I think we want to be safe. I think we don't always think about how what we deem as safety impacts the rest of the world.
Absolutely. And talking of the rest of the world, Wendy, is that the whole world wants to have a bite of the Big Apple. That's the truth. And people go to all extent to get to the US, either be it from the Mexico side or be it the real side, you know, through the visa side. But right. So that's a fact. But the fact is that many of us still don't know what the US wants from the world. And I mean the US political system wants from the world. And what do people, common people, want from the rest of the world? Or they are not aware of it, or they are not bothered because they have already, they are already so-called in the best place of the world, you know, if we can say it. A lot of people think that the biggest democracy or the large is also a very a land of plenty with whatever challenges it is. So how would you like to explain that? And when you say, when American presidents, they say, let's make America great again, or let's defend democracy, those Hollywood movies and everything. What is it that America's political system defends most? Is it about democracy? Is it the American way of life? Or is it about the sole power in this world? Does, what is it that it defends, or it works all the time to defend for? Or it can sometimes get very confusing even to the people who are following politics closely. How do you help us understand this part of the mindset from the Capitol Hill, from the district capital, or from the streets of anywhere in the United States of America?
Yeah, I mean, I will say, I think this is a very confusing point. I think the American political system has not figured out what it wants from the rest of the world in this lane. We have, you know, we have a very complicated history as it relates to immigration. And frankly, for me, the Make America Great Again slogan raises a lot of questions of when exactly was America great? What exactly are you trying to go back to? I'm living in 2023, and that's been the best time possible to be a Black person in the US. So like going backwards isn't a priority for me. I would not like to do that. And I think we have a lot of struggles around immigration. We, you know, have this, the best movie version of it, as you were mentioning, is like the, you know, Statue of Liberty, bring us your poor, bring us your like downtrodden, like people are, all are welcome. But I think, as we all know, that's never really been a policy that has like actually been enacted. So we have been struggling with this need to show the world like how great we are and say like, we're the best country in the world. Like, we're number one, like all of those things, but that comes at a cost. And it, when you show that to the world, people are going to want to come here. And there are also a lot of, you know, the stories of the American dream of someone who comes here with basically nothing and is able to build a life for themselves and their family. And like, those are stories we also champion. But then when people say they want to come, we're like, oh, hold on, like, you know, hold up. And so I think it is something that we as a nation really struggle with, because we do, it's like we want people to come, but we only want certain people to come, and we don't know for how long, and we're not entirely sure what the process should be. So we're always fighting over that. And so it is a, it's a real struggle for us to have that identity as a nation. And I don't really know the path forward. I don't know that we will settle it. I hope we will, and I really want us to be able to be better in that way, but it's complicated. And I think it's also, you know, there is a scarcity mindset to it. I think that is why these narratives that come up in elections around immigration get people riled up, you know, like your average everyday person who this really does not impact their life. Like, I was talking to a friend who was in, I think, Kentucky, and the state legislature was like, we need to pass, you know, a law about immigration. And I'm like, who are you scared of? Tennessee? Like, there's no one coming there. Like, you know, they're not a border state. It's not like somebody could like cross the border and they're like, I live here now. Like, this really doesn't have anything to do with your borders. So like, why are you, they wanted to pass like a law on border security. It's like, why? So I think there is like a fear that immigrants from anywhere across the world would want to come here and they would somehow make it like Americans had less opportunity, which is just not a real thing. But it is a narrative that has taken root, particularly on the right. And, you know, people operate out of fear. And so they're scared. And so they're like, I don't want that. So, yeah, it is something that we're struggling with even internally.
Right, right. There, these are the questions, I guess, as we move forward, whether, as I said, the elections in 2024, with so many elections coming up all across the globe. The question is not what politicians or politics want you to understand, but the bigger question is whether as a citizen, you are keeping your light of intellect alive or not. Because that is the only thing that is going to, you know, keep the path lighted for you to walk forward. Rest, I don't see anywhere any system is fully capable without anybody's participation to actually show you the way. But whatever way, whatever it is, Wendy, it is nice talking to you. And you know, a lot of people who want to understand and know more about you, so, and also engage with you professionally in terms of people who have actually do not have the military industrial complex designs in their mind, but they're the design of empathy and doing good. So how do they connect with you?
Thank you so much. I am on Twitter and Instagram at, I'm at Wendy R. Wallace, on basically everything. And then also my email, we can maybe put my email in the show notes.
Absolutely.
So people can reach me if they have additional questions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure with your understanding of, you know, about politics being very, very something of a personal, because you cannot run away from politics. You know, long back when I was doing my master's in Delhi University in political science, I read somewhere in one of those books is that, and I'm not quoting it exactly, but something like that, that whoever you are, and even if, and whatever you want to be, even if you are not interested in politics, always remember, politics is interested in you. So
that's right.
As long as, even if you are not interested in politics, keep your intellect alive, keep your intellect, keep your path of that you are taking towards the future. It will keep it bright for you to walk very, very softly, truthfully, and towards the path of good. With this, it's a wrap on this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live. Thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.